Excuse me.
Sie hören die Sendung Wellenlänge. Vous écoutez la transmission Longueur d'onde. Udite la trasmissione Lunghezza d'onde. You are hearing the transmission called Wavelength.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And this week, I have to say we start with some sad news. That is one of my chief contributors and a very old friend of mine, Captain Maurice Sedon, passed away this week on Wednesday, March the 5th, at approximately 6:30. He'll be sadly missed. He contributed many, many tapes to this program, including the 24-hour marathon. And we will be probably having a sort of more of a memorial program to him later. It's rather short notice to put anything together. This week we welcome back DJ Hybridist. Good afternoon.
Hello there, William.
Right. And you and I, well, we both knew Maurice very well, didn't we?
Yes, over a very extensive period of time.
So yes.
It's quite hard hearing his voice there because in one way I don't quite accept that he's gone yet.
No.
Even though obviously...
Well, it was only 2 days ago, and it remains to be seen what how the various arrangements go with him. But yes, we both knew him intimately, didn't we, for a period of about at least 30 years, I would say.
Probably, yes. We went on holiday with him. We saw him latterly. We used to see him very regularly, saw him as often as we could, because really, frankly, when somebody reaches their 80s and they start to become unwell, time is really of the essence. So
yeah.
We did try to see him as often as we possibly could, and I think we attempted to, not sufficiently hard, to see him this week, but we missed.
That's right. I mean, we were planning. We saw him about, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
2 or 3 weeks ago, yeah.
In Ashford Care Home, where he had been living for about the last 3 years. Is that right, or 2 years?
Probably 2 years.
Well, he was a year in hospital, wasn't he? And then 2 years in the care home. And no?
Well, he was in another care home before this one.
All right. He'd been in care homes for about the last 2 years.
Yes.
Latterly in Ashford Care Home.
Yeah.
And which is where he passed away aged, what, was he 87? Or would he have been 87 this year?
No, he was 87.
87.
He would have been 88 in May.
In May, right. Yeah, yeah. And it has to be said, the last time we saw him, he wasn't in great shape, was he? He sort of had to be brought out of his room in a kind of, sort of on a chair with a sort of, not exactly a wheelchair, but almost like a sort of portable bed type structure.
Yes, he'd been on, I think he'd been in hospital before Christmas. We visited him then, and then he seemed to recover from an infection. But then when we saw him about 2 or 3 weeks ago, staff said that, in fact, he had been extremely poorly and they hadn't anticipated that he would survive at that stage. But then somehow he rallied again.
Yeah.
And it felt like he was going in for another round. And then suddenly...
It was sudden and unexpected, it seems. But, yeah. But we first... I suppose I first encountered him when I was a dispatch rider, a motorcycle messenger, when Morris was also a motorcycle messenger, riding around central London on his old BSA covered in with wires sort of sprouting from it, covered in engine oil, wearing his tabard, which advertised heated gloves. And that's when I first got to know him. And then we opened a vegetarian restaurant, didn't we, Borough Market, actually in the 80s. And that's when Morris started to visit our restaurant and would come on a regular basis.
Well, I think it was almost daily or twice daily when he was still dispatch riding. He'd be whizzing about the town. Well, not whizzing exactly, rather
chugging
slowly, chugging along, and then he'd drop in at lunchtime, have something to eat, have a siesta, then go on his way, and then return again late in the evening.
What was the siesta? Remind me about that. I can't remember quite what the...
Well, he was great European, I suppose, because he, you know, he had all of this mixed ancestry, sort of German and French and so on. So he was much more European than English, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, what used to be called continental, I suppose.
Yeah.
So the siesta being more of a European thing, you know, like, but it's to do with the heat of the day, so
yes.
You don't really need to transfer it to our climate. However, he persisted with these little routines because it obviously suited him constitutionally.
Yeah.
So he'd go into the larder, and there was a sort of, it was a long larder because the building in which the restaurant lived, well, it had been an old banana warehouse, so he'd go to the end of the larder, wouldn't he? And then there was a little space at the end there.
Yeah.
And I think he must have had some sort of improvised mattress system. And he'd snooze for, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, and then come up refreshed and ask for coffee and then be on his way.
Yeah. But he could eat an enormous amount, couldn't he? He was quite a consumer of food.
Well, once again, yes, he had a lust for life in its many forms, and he did love food, and he was quite knowledgeable about food.
Oh, yeah.
He had a huge collection of spices and herbs, and was his own herbalist, really. Was his own sort of doctor. Once again, more of a Germanic trait than a sort of English one.
But he ate sort of lavishly, if one can call it that, of raw garlic.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he was a great believer in that. And that was both a blessing and a curse, because if you came at him and you didn't know him, then you could be really put off, because the garlic fumes were just quite phenomenal, almost toxic.
So he exuded this sort of aura of raw garlic and lavender, wasn't
I was just going to say it was offset by this by the lavender. I can't remember what that was
I just think he sort of, I'm not sure. I think he bathed in it or something, didn't he? Didn't he use lavender oil in his bath?
It's a great sort of relaxant, isn't it?
Yeah,
and it's a sort of general, quite good for you in all sorts of different ways. So that was another thing that he was a great lover of.
But I remember he would eat an enormous meal. I mean, he would come at lunchtime and eat as much as you could put in front of him. And then he would have the siesta.
Yeah.
And then he would emerge. And he had a sort of I don't know what you call it, a line which he would repeat. He'd sort of approach you.
Yes.
Looking sort of expectantly.
Oh, yes. He would say, "Is there anything yogurty, Sandra?"
Yes.
And yes, there was always something yogurty, because we used to buy these huge vats of Greek yogurt from Neil's Yard Dairy, which would be delivered several times a week. And he would partake of that.
So he would eat something yogurty and then perhaps coffee.
Yes, coffee, and then as you might be hinting that he did a rerun in the evening, in similar quantities, and I suppose that was part of his nature, though, wasn't it? You know, he had a bit of a siege mentality, so he was probably storing nuts for the winter, in a way, you know, sort of filling up just, you know, in times of plenty. And he obviously had the capacity for it. He was quite a tall man. And he was quite energetic at that time, so I suppose he...
And he wore this heated clothing, didn't he? So he'd have black leather garments on, which were sort of, again, soaked in some kind of oil to keep it supple.
Yeah.
But underneath that would be these various garments which had his homemade garments with wires running through them.
Yes.
Which would heat up.
And then he had this sort of unit on the side, didn't he?
A battery.
The battery that he plugged in and unplugged if he got too warm, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, and he looked splendid in his leathers, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he had been an officer in the
Royal Signals,
so he had that kind of bearing as well. So he had those fabulous leather trousers and a great leather jacket.
Yes.
And a white T-shirt, and he's
that
was a bit of a uniform, but it really suited him very
well. Yeah, yeah. So he was one of our regular visitors for probably 8 or 9 years.
Yes, 8 or 9 years, yeah.
And then he when the restaurant closed, I suppose he also repaired valve equipment. He lived at Datchet Cottage, directly under the Heathrow flight path, and we learnt recently that in fact after he was taken into the care home, Datchet Cottage has been demolished.
Yes.
So
all traces of his life have now gone.
Virtually, apart from
these sound recordings which you have, which are just fantastic.
Mm.
I think it's amazing that you've got that as a record of his incredible eloquence and facility for communication was just remarkable. I mean, I don't think I've met anyone who could
be
quite so keen to know everything about everyone.
Mm. And those, I managed to rescue hundreds of these cassettes from the floor of Datchet Cottage, which it has to be said was in a terribly squalid state, wasn't it? The whole house was completely uninhabitable by most people's standards.
Well, I think it just sort of reached a point beyond which there was no return, really. You know, it's one of those sort of beyond Quentin Crisp type situations where...
Yes. Sort of 50 years worth of dust. And,
yes, and dust and tar and oil. And because the garden was just absolutely full of multiples of things. Once again, the siege mentality, you know, he wouldn't have one motorbike, he might have five. And, and the same with deep freezes and all the rest of it. Everything was in quantity.
Yes.
So he was surrounded by...
But he had this, he'd had this habit of recording all of his telephone conversations, didn't he, on cassette.
Yes.
So every time he made a phone call, he would record it onto a cassette and then just store these cassettes. But then as his life became more confused, as he sort of lost touch with his with looking after himself, so that when we eventually went sort of, I don't know, probably a year ago or possibly longer, when he left, he was still in the care home.
Yeah.
And I gathered these cassettes, which were, they were literally on the floor, weren't they? They were all over the place in plastic bags, covered in dust.
You had expressed an interest in them, so whether they were just waiting for you. Well, I don't know what would have happened to them.
Well, they would have been thrown in a skip.
I suppose
they were just emptying the place.
I suppose nobody, it needed somebody like you to see the value of retaining that material, because it constitutes such an interesting life.
And they have, out of those cassettes, I mean, of which there are several hundred, and there are, I've probably got 300 still, which I haven't even played myself, because most of them are lengthy conversations with this. He had a series of women friends, didn't he?
Yeah.
One of whom was called Anna.
Uh-huh.
And these conversations with Anna were all recorded, many of them in German.
Yeah.
So those could be... A forthcoming series on Wavelength.
That would be fantastic.
Hopefully, it might attract a few German listeners.
Yes, and maybe with some of his favourite music. He likes sort of kind of Viennese
waltzes. Well, Viennese waltzes were his main. Okay, well, that is, in memory of Captain Maurice Seddon, Royal Signals retired, who sadly died on Wednesday, March the 5th. I imagine. I think it was March the 5th at 6:30. And more details, if anyone is interested in Captain Maurice Seddon, they can contact me via this radio station. And presumably in a fortnight or so, there will be sort of funeral arrangements and so on. And who knows, maybe some listeners. I have had emails over the last few years from people. One or two of whom were old colleagues of Morris's, and they contacted me to say, where is he now? And I don't know, those people might want to contact me. Okay, well, tomorrow, Saturday, is International Women's Day.
That's
is
right.
It not?
Yeah.
And so today we're going to play tracks by women, and specifically several tracks by Pussy Riot.
Right.
In complete contrast to Maurice Seddon, possibly wouldn't have approved of him.
Well, not altogether, but they are similar in the sense of they're attempting to create resistance. He was very, very uncompromising.
Indeed, and that's true.
And did not, and lived what a lot of people might have thought of as being a subversive sort of lifestyle, which hardly ever touched society. Obviously, it had to from time to time, but generally that was his outlook. He was completely on his own, an individual.
Yes.
Par excellence.
Yeah.
So this is what Pussy Riot, and really anybody who sticks their head above the parapet is attempting, is to create something new.
Yeah. I suppose he was a sort of one-man movement, in a way.
Yes.
There could have been followers also wearing heated gloves, tabards, but it never happened.
No. I suppose. But I think he had followers of his, in the sense that people were drawn to him.
Yeah.
Obviously, people didn't dress like him or necessarily want to be like him, but they appreciated him. They appreciated his singularity, his individuality, which wasn't. I was going to say it wasn't elitist, but I'm not really sure whether it was or it wasn't.
No. He obviously had the confidence of a... He'd gone to Gordonstoun School, of course, which gave him, and being part of the officer class, gave him a certain confidence to be different in a way that perhaps there are other eccentrics who are not from that sort of more elitist sector of society.
Yeah.
Who might turn to sort of hoarding or living eccentric lives, but they wouldn't have had exuded his confidence, which allowed him to be incredibly resolute and forceful, but not in an aggressive way.
No, not at all. He was really quite...
I mean, he was a perfect gentleman. Absolutely.
A very gentle person.
Yeah.
In fact, not at all aggressive. Wouldn't want to be aggressive or confrontational. Would talk and talk in order to try and iron something out.
Yeah.
But yes, not aggressive.
But he had this quality which he called Deutsche Gründlichkeit.
Right.
Which is sort of German thoroughness. And he could be like a dog with a bone, couldn't he?
Yes.
With certain issues.
Yes.
He just would not let go.
Yes. A bit like Pussy Riot, maybe.
Although, of course, his own taste was entirely for Viennese waltzes, as we've already said.
Yes. But in terms of personalities and kicking the...
Eccentricity.
Yeah.
And a theatrical element.
Yes, yes.
The way he presented himself.
Yeah.
As he entered the dining room, he would sometimes spin this sort of visor, which was in front of his face.
He loved an audience. He needed an audience.
Right.
He needed to communicate with other people.
Yeah.
Very much so. But I suppose that's something you'll probably get into when you do the next program.
We'll do more programs about Maurice.
Yeah.
Let's press on. We're going to play a few Pussy Riot tracks and perhaps some precursors and influences and just general stuff around that subject. And I thought we'd start with, this is a Yoko Ono track from 1971. It's only 30 seconds long and it comes from a Fluxus Anthology LP. And it's called Toilet Piece. No. This is probably the time when I should have asked for the engineer. It is Engineers Week. I shall seize this opportunity to thank Robbie Haywood for everything he does.
Unpaid as well.
Unpaid volunteer engineer, Yoko Ono.
Стабильность готова! Господи! Освободи! Освободи! Брусчатку! Освободи! 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 Брусчатку! Унитазы начищены, курицы в штатском, призраки Жижика смытые в сортире, Химлес зачищен, у Чирикова недопуск, феминистки отправлены в декретный отпуск. Освободи, 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 брусчатку, освободи, 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 брусчатку. Когда не поздно стать госпожой, дубинки заряжены, крики все громче, разомни мышцы рук и ног, полицейский лижет у тебя между ног. Освободи, 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 брусчатку, освободи, 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 брусчатку.
Здесь вообще-то какая-то хуйня творится.
Египетский воздух полезен для легких, сделай тахрир на Красной площади, проведи бой день среди сильных женщин, найди на балконе лом, освободи брусчатку. Тахрир, тахрир, тахрир,
Бенгази,
тахрир, тахрир, тахрир,
Триполи.
Елена Гуро, Финляндия. Это ли, нет ли, хвою шуят, шуят Анна-Мария, Лиза, нет? Это ли, озеро ли, лу-ла-ло-ла-ла-ла-лу, Лиза-ло-ла-лу-ла-ли, хвою шуят, шуят. Ти. Лес ли, озеро ли, это ли? Эх, Анна-Мария, Лиза, хей, таря, тери, дери, 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 ху, холе, куле, не, озеро ли, лес ли, тио, и, ви,
while holding a couple in my arms. another's on the way. This chicken's done tore up her nest, and I'm ready to make a deal. And you can't afford to turn it down, 'cause you know I've got the pill. This incubator is overused, because you've kept it filled. The feeling good comes easy now, since I've got the pill. It's getting dark, it's roosting time, tonight's too good to be real. Oh, but daddy, don't you worry none, 'cause mama's got the pill. Oh, daddy, don't you worry none, 'cause mama's got the pill.
Yes, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, which repeats on Sunday at 9 o'clock. So these programmes sort of bracket Saturday, which is International Women's Day. And in honour of that, we even have a woman in the studio with us today, DJ Hybridist, who's here to support me in this task. We heard Pussy Riot earlier from their Kill the Sexist EP, not as Robbie Hayward, our trusty engineer, has written on the CD. He's called it Kill the Sexiest EP. I'm sorry, Robbie, that's not it. It's Kill the Sexist. But never mind, it's a minor error.
Perhaps he had to translate it from the Russian.
Could be. After that, we heard a sound poem by Eleanor Guro called Finland. And that was composed in 1910.
God, that was amazing.
Good. Thank you. Good. Excellent.
What was it about?
No idea. It's about Finland, I suppose. But it's described as a sound poem. And that comes from a sort of book with two CDs called Baku Symphony of Sirens, Sound Experiments in the Russian Avant-Garde. Original documents and reconstructions of 72 key works of music, poetry and agitprop. And I'll be playing sort of several more things from this collection. I'll just pick out the ones by women, all of whom were an influence, I think, on Pussy Riot, particularly Stepanova, who was Rodchenko's partner.
Right.
And then after the Eleanor Guro, we heard Loretta Lynn singing a track called The Pill.
When was that recorded?
Don't know. I'd have to consult the booklet. It comes in a strange CD, which was a compilation of apparently somebody put together this compilation of tracks. They supposedly formed most of the most played records that were on a jukebox in the sex shop on King's Road, run by Vivian Westwood and Malcolm McLaren. Mm. And somebody put these tracks together. I can't remember his name now. Somebody, Marco, somebody or other, I think. He put this together, this CD. And if you give me 1 minute, I'll try and track down the... what track was that? It was track 17. There's tiny writing here. It won't leap out at me. I'll have to try and find it later. Though The Pill, Loretta Lynn, single version, published by Coal Miners Music Limited in 1975, looks like. So that was the only Loretta Lynn, only such track on this compilation CD. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I suppose that's why I was asking about the date. I suppose I'd be interested to know when, you know. I mean, if it's 1975, that's actually very late, isn't it, for somebody
to be
singing about the pill?
Yes, perhaps you're right.
But that might just be that's
Marco Pironi was the name of the guy that put this together.
That particular interpretation might just be...
Yeah.
Later in the day.
The Polaroid. It does say single version, so it might have appeared earlier.
Yeah.
On an LP or something. Yes. Perhaps they then decided it was some.
I think it's a bit unfortunate that she's got the upbeat on it. Really, it's you know, because she's trying to take control. She's saying she's got control now.
Right.
You know, she doesn't have to be pregnant all the time because now there's this amazing thing that she can take that will give her freedom. I mean, if she can get away with it in that sort of environment. I don't know. It sounds very southern and a bit.
But isn't that something for her to be happy about? Doesn't it? She's been liberated, hasn't she? Isn't she? Isn't this why she feels? Isn't that why it's kind of upbeat? And,
I suppose so. Yeah.
All right. Did you have any? You've got some sort of.
There was the Yoko Ono too, wasn't there?
Oh yes. Yeah. Well, that was earlier. That was the toilet piece.
Right. Yes.
From the Fluxus anthology.
Yes.
That was before the Pussy Riot track.
And what's
indeed.
The date of that, the Yoko Ono?
That is 1971.
Right.
Again, that's quite sort of late for Fluxus in a way.
Yes.
I mean, that's sort of... that's just the Fluxus anthology. She might have done a toilet piece sort of before that.
Yes.
Probably in the 60s. But we'll probably play some more Yoko Ono later.
Yeah. But, I mean, I suppose the thing about Yoko Ono is that she is... has always been politically engaged, so whatever she's doing has got that element to it. With Loretta Lynn,
yeah.
I'm not sure how much I buy it, in a way. I suppose that's what I mean. It's not that it's upbeat and, yes, she should be happy about being free and so on. I don't quite buy it.
Right.
It's a novelty song. It sounds like a novelty song.
Yeah.
It doesn't really sound...
Okay.
You know,
that's a good point. Yes. Yeah.
So
in fact, the rest of her stuff probably was pretty commercial, kind of just country and western, middle of the road sort of. Whatever.
Well, I don't know enough about her to say yay or nay to that. But I mean, I do know that Yoko Ono continues to this day at 80 plus, probably 81 now.
Yeah.
To be this phenomenal force for change in a, once again, quite a gentle way.
Yeah.
You know. Mm. She uses her voice powerfully when she needs to.
Right.
Which makes it sound, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
All power to
her. Good point, yes. Mm. Okay, gosh, we are rattling through things already.
Oh, crikey, yes.
Yeah, so what shall I play next? Let's see. We've got, this is by another Russian avant-gardist woman poet of the beginning of the 20th century. This is by Olga Rozanova. And the title of this track is Spain, and it's a sound poem from 1916.
Crikey.
Hopefully, that's if I manage to get this right this time.
Olga Razanova, Испания. Vulgarak, ах бульваров, варвары гусары, вульерабит, а рабы бар арапы, тар губят тара, алжир сугубят, ан и енно. Гиенно, гитана, жик и гид тела, бежит тарантелла, вира жирн рантье, антиквар, штара, квартомас, фантом, гелька негра, метресса, гримасы, гримит, гимн смерти.
Thank you.
Okay, before that last track, we heard Kropotkin Vodka by Pussy Riot. And that last track was by The Slits from the John Peel sessions, dating from 1978. And that track was called FM, Frequent Mutilation, and FM radio, of course, hence the sort of little mix at the end of various radio tracks. And Robbie Hayward, our excellent engineer, popped his head around the door to say they had a phone call to inform us that Marco Pironi was apparently the guitarist in Adam and the Ants.
Oh, really?
Hence his knowledge of uh-huh. the jukebox in Sex. Thank you very much to that caller for saving me having to try and read the tiny small print on some of these CD booklets. Okay, where should we go from there? Pussy Riot, do you think? What's where should we take this now?
Well, it'd be interesting to compare the Pussy Riot with the Slits in that it occurs
right.
to me the Slits are obviously much more musical. It is about the music itself and it's about the content.
Mm.
You know, it is. Whereas Pussy Riot are using the voice and the sound as a form of protest, as a form of
right.
direct protest. So even
apparently the Slits were pretty incompetent when they first started. They
yes.
were, I think they were known for being pretty, they learned as they went along. But
yes.
Of course, the significant thing is that they were an all-female group,
yeah.
whereas people like Susie and the Banshees and X-Ray Specs and so on had most of them, I think, had male
yeah.
backing. I'll probably get another phone call, so
yes.
it's putting me right, but I think that's the case. The Slits were an all-female band. Pussy Riot are all-female. Pussy Riot are obviously influenced by punk.
Yeah, but so what I'm saying is that they're putting their voices to different uses. They are, one is attempting to be within the popular stream of post-punk or punk music.
But can you
as
not?
But
can surely music can be anarchic and have a significance?
It can be, but I
without
think
sort of proclaiming a particular, you know, slogan.
It can do, but Pussy Riot sound to me, notwithstanding the fact that I don't understand Russian, it sounds proclamatory.
Yes.
It's not musical in that sense for me.
True. Well, it has to be said that their music is probably subsidiary to their political activism.
And that's great. That's what makes the coming together very interesting, because just doing posters and sit-ins and marches doesn't do it by itself. Well, not sometimes it does.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're using their voices in a very interesting way.
Yes, they could have an accusation of self-publicity levelled against them. I mean, they're quite sensationalist activities. The 40 seconds, whatever it was, in the church that
yeah.
got them arrested and sent
yeah.
to Siberia
yes.
was a provocation. One has to ask, what is their motivation, actually? Are they politically motivated. I think they are, actually. They don't issue things on CD or record.
No. Well, one of the women who did go to jail for 3 years, almost 3 years, and was only let out because of the Sochi. They were let out ahead of the ending of their sentences. She is now campaigning on behalf of female prisoners.
Right.
So, yeah, it's turning... I don't know how... I mean, they are political acts, but they may be turning into even more.
They become politicized by their own
arguments, bigger things too.
Right.
But just as a segue to the slits, if it's called mutilation, I would just like to mention the amazing campaign that the schoolgirl Farma Mohammed, who I think probably is Woman of the Year so far, although she's 17, she got together this petition under change.org to present to Michael Gove, the Education Secretary, to help in the putting a stop to FGM, female genital mutilation.
Right.
And she did it in conjunction with The Guardian, so it was... I think it has been successful in her terms. That she wanted to get 220,000 signatories, and she got beyond that. And Michael Gove is now taking it on. So I think for me that shows not only... It's not just about a really incredible subject that she's taken on at quite a young age, but it also indicates a new way of doing politics, single-issue politics, since people are so disaffected with political parties. This is one way in which people can get their voices heard, and anybody can start a petition on change.org.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to start one.
Okay. Well, that was a completely incidental coincidence, wasn't
it? It was the word mutilation.
It was FM. FM radio, female mutilation.
Going back to that, your choice of that song, I did like the song. And I like the radio interference.
It was quite unexpected. It sounds like it's gone wrong or something.
And it's good that you're playing it on the radio. FM,
absolutely.
And all the rest of it. Yes, politicking over.
Good, okay. And of course, the Pussy Riot, I think we're also influenced by what has come to be known as the third wave of feminist punk music and activism, the Riot Girls, and specifically a group called Bikini Kill, who emerged in the 90s, mostly in America, I think. But the Slits, I think, perhaps are quite a good starting point for this movement.
Yes.
Okay. I could play another Russian item, I suppose. We had Rosa Nova, didn't we? This is quite a good one, I think. This is by an outfit, another Russian avant-garde outfit that were called the Nothingists. and let's see.
Where do they date from?
I'm not sure. In fact, I've got to just talk amongst yourselves for a minute whilst I try and figure out where this CD is. This is again from the Baku Symphony of Sirens, key works of music, poetry, and agitprop prop from the Russian avant-garde, 1908 to 1942. If I can find this track, this is number 27 on this double CD. And this is by the group that were called the Nothingists.
Manifest от Ничевоков. Заунывно тянутся в воздухе похоронные звуки медного колокола. Медленно колышется под печальный трезвон по дороге жизни, покрытой пылью и усыпанной терниями, мрачный катафалк смерти, на котором лежит сухой, бессочный, желтый труп поэзии, выданном по купону широкого потребления на скоро сколоченном гробу эпох. Позади плетута ковыляют, молча пережевывая слезы, седые старички ветераны и инвалиды поэзии, шатая старческими, дрожащими, ослабленными членами, сзади шамкают ногами дерзкие из дерзких умершей поэзии, футуристы всех мастей, имажисты, экспрессионисты, группы, группки, группики. И у свежевырытой могилы стал мрачный кортеж смерти. И гулко, и тупо стучат влажные комья глины об осиновую крышку гроба эпох. Эфир впитывает звуки и поглощает, а жизнь, дающая солнце, льет свои живительные лучи на прекрасную трехмерную.
На поклоны, призрак свободы на небеса.
И правда отправит Сибирь каналам.
Глубоко губей, склоны седой, ведет протестующих тесовый конвой. Самое святейшего не оскорбит.
Женщина может рожать и любить.
Школу к тебе идет проповедник.
Иди на урок, принеси ему денег.
Подряд гудя и верит Путина лучшему в Бога. Только верил, поезд тело не заменит митинга.
Протесты с нами, представь его Мария.
Yeah, that was Mother of God, Putin Out by Pussy Riot.
From That's clear enough.
From their EP, Kill the Sexist. It did get a bit of a raised eyebrow, the earlier track, by the Nothingists, because it was the voice of a man. I got a frown from DJ Hybridist.
I know, I was just perplexed.
Yeah,
I was wondering, first of all, if it was a very gravelly female voice.
Right. No, but it was a Pussy Riot, I think, were influenced by the Russian avant-garde,
right.
The whole of the avant-garde at the beginning of the 20th century,
right.
Including people like Rodchenko and... Krushnik and Malevich.
I suppose we have to accept the men are there somewhere.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. I should have played a different track, perhaps. But the Nothingists, the sort of nihilist...
We can't ignore the other 50%, can we?
No.
No.
Well, we could have done today, I suppose. We're trying to bring various strands together, including Captain Morris Seddon Royal Signals, retired into
There's
this
a lot
whole
to
thing.
Do, isn't there?
Which
yes.
is, and
yes.
in fact, we're rapidly running
yes.
out of time.
So, what are you doing next?
I've forgotten. I don't know. Where are we now? I was going to mention these two books. There are two excellent books about Pussy Riot. Words Will Break Cement: The Passion of Pussy Riot by Masha Gessen. And Pussy Riot, A Punk Prayer for Freedom. And there's in the one Pussy Riot, A Punk Prayer for Freedom, there is an interesting section at the back called Scrutinizing Girl Revolution Style Now by Vivian Goldman, in which she talks about the significance of their clothing. Specifically the balaclavas.
Oh, yes.
Should I read a little bit about that.
Yeah.
The eyes, nose and mouth holes of a basic balaclava are cut out of a regular woolen beanie hat, unfolded to its full length. Much as Russia abounds in cheap Chinese imports, they appear to have more balaclava colours than anywhere in New York. And colour is the subject of much heated philosophical debate amongst the Pussy Riot posse. And so on. Black is banned specifically from those crucial balaclavas for its association with terrorists, and so on. Any thoughts about the Pussy Riot garments? I mean, I think it's...
It's a very arresting look, yes. It seems to do its job. I mean, they've got themselves sort of well organised in that way, haven't they?
You've
got a good look,
yeah.
A good sound, and the actions. So they are fully functioning as...
Yeah.
Political participants.
It works, doesn't it?
It does work, yeah.
They just look great, I think, especially, I don't know how long it will last, that look, because like sort of a lot of fashionable things, it can have its moment for about 3 months, and then we'll start to look a bit passé.
I suppose the thing with...
Or if the fashion magazines get hold of it over here, it'll start to look wrong.
It may just become too familiar, and in order to refocus your attention on yourself, you might have to change to look...
Right.
You might change your views on things, so that might go with a change of appearance.
Yeah. Any signs of it on the street here? Have you ever seen anyone on the streets of London looking remotely like a Pussy Riot activist?
I can't say I have. No.
No.
But we don't have quite so much to complain about. But you mean, in fact, just in a fashion sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
But as an activist, I mean, I don't know. It's sort of anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, that's another. We're rapidly running out of time. That's another whole area of research.
Yes.
I suppose. Shall we launch into you've.
Well, haven't you got something else?
Well, I've got dozens of things here,
right.
But we won't have time for them. I mean, I've brought in a whole stack of women's tracks. We've got more Yoko Ono. I've got Juliana Barwick. I've got something called Boss Soul 12 Poems by Sarah Webster Fabio.
Right.
We got the Space Lady. We've only got about 5 minutes left. So
right.
I think I'll play your track because you brought something and you wanted to play this track.
Okay, and if I could also say that I heard on another radio station, talking of politics in this country, for instance, apparently it's 30 years ago now since the miners' strike and the women, the wives of the miners, were probably for the first time in their lives became incredibly active. And it has freed a lot of people because a lot of those women, apparently, according to what they were saying on the radio this morning, didn't realise that they had it in them.
Right.
They did not know that they could do something else,
right.
In the sense that some people left school at 15 and then this woman said she then went on to do her O-levels, her A-levels and a degree,
right.
And all the rest of it. She was liberated by that fight.
Okay.
Communities were decimated, but
yeah.
Something good came out of it for some people.
Right. Excellent. So that's International Women's Day tomorrow, really.
Tomorrow, yes.
Yeah.
And so it should be happening all over the world. And we're just going out on something very cheesy but celebratory.
Okay, your choice. I mean, that's fine. Who is this?
Well, it's...
Do we need to announce it? Should we just play it?
Let's just play it.